The following episode of FOFOP is rated MA. It contains alternating hosts, a rotating roster of guests, and mild coarse language. FOFOP advises that it is not suitable for anyone under the age of 15, or anyone who came here looking for one of those highbrow NPR-type podcasts. Minors must be accompanied by a parent or guardian. This is John Deek speaking.
Hello and welcome to FOFOP. I am Will Anderson, and joining me, guest Charlie, it's another HammoFOP. I mean, I could, you know, get other people on the podcast, but why would I when I can catch up with my great friend Justin Hamilton and talk about life? How are you, Hammo?
I am well, thank you. I've hit a milestone in life. I think you hit these milestones at different points. You never know when you're going to hit them. And when it comes along, you just have to look at the situation and go, well, that's where I'm at now. And I saw photos of myself on the weekend and I went, yep, that's the best I can hope to look for. It's all downhill from here. I've hit a new plateau in how I can look, and will it be the giddy heights of the young Harry Potter-esque guy that strode across the land telling jokes before? No. Now it's getting close to Paul Reisner's brother in Mad About You. That's where it's at, and I've accepted it, and I feel relieved, to be honest. It's like, oh, well. What are you going to do?
So I was looking at some photos of you from younger days, just before we came on to do this podcast. Amy was going through a box of old photos and...
Don't tell me why.
It was that's how I prepare for the podcast. I look at a younger version of you.
and then sees me on the video camera.
No, I was looking at some younger photos of both of us in our youth, having some good times.
Yeah.
Firstly, I know this makes me old-fashioned. Maybe this is one of my milestones, but phone cameras can get fucked. Like, I know it's great and you can change the filters and whatever, but there is nothing like an old-fashioned light photograph that you can just, like, get out of a box and go through. You just never do that with the photos on your phone. Maybe young people do. Maybe there are people out there who absolutely do that, and I'm only speaking for myself, but I never go back through my phone or, like, you know, like, share the photos on my phone with somebody else that, like, but in that box are memories. In that box are times and, like, just looks and houses and fashions and friends that are still there and friends that are not there at all. Friends that have changed. There's this amazing photo of Charlie, Cam Knight and Michael Chamberlain. And, like, it's back before Charlie got super fit. So, like, he's more sort of, like, you know, fit, but, like, sort of more round, like, you know, funny Charlie before he became, like, you know, fitness Charlie. There's Cam Knight, and he is so clean cut, like, male model, you know, Cam Knight, who he's now, like, a bit thinner. He's got, like, longer hair. He's, like, singing songs on Instagram without his shirt on, like. And then there's Michael Chamberlain, who, if you saw this photo and tried to convince somebody that he was a time traveler who had not aged in any way, it would be good fucking evidence for your argument. If you got Charlie, Cam and Michael to recreate that photo, you'd be like, one of those motherfuckers is a time traveler. And it's the one going, hey, dude. Yeah.
He has such smooth skin. It doesn't age.
He has a baby face. He's a guy who's, like, settled into a look, and that just is kind of what he looks like. I think we remember our younger selves more fondly than these photos would convince us. So I think that your look now, and I would even argue my look now, are better looks than we were rocking 15, 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Well, I feel like, well,
there's one of yours I saw that it looked like Harry Potter joined Blink-182. Like, I was like, it's like the facial hair,
say it ain't so.
The style. It was, I was like, nah, that's not right. I like this new Justin more.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, I appreciate that. Like, it's, but I am also looking at the tiny photo of me in the Zoom meeting, and there is a substantial amount of light shining off the top of my head, which is a shame because I like getting a haircut. It's one of the few things that I enjoy having done to me. That and a cheeky finger in the arsehole. Am I right, kids?
Still got it. Hasn't lost it. These days for a prostate exam, though, because you've got to do it at our age.
Yeah. Oh, mate, like I'm so scared. It seems like a terrible way to go.
But, how's that? So, I think you look super sophisticated. I feel like I am doing an interview with not, I'm not specifically thinking of one person here. I'm thinking almost like of an amalgam of people. But I feel like I'm doing a serious interview with one of the dudes who used to be on West Wing. Right, you know, like some kind of old lefty actor who's just kind of like, you know, grown into kind of having a more, you know, like writery, you know, artisty, but kind of more relaxed. I'm in a hoodie. I got my glasses on. You know, like I got as much hair on my face as I have on my head, but I wear them both well.
Yeah, they're all manicured. I'm coming to you from my cabin that's completely environmentally friendly.
Well, also, if you don't look closely on your back wall, there's like a bookcase and there's like videos and stuff. It looks quite impressive. There's a massive photo of David Bowie, poster of David Bowie that immediately takes your attention. That's where your eyes first go. Then they go to the books. It's only after they go to those two places that they eventually go above your head and realize there's a whole bunch of Batman dolls.
It's like one sitting on my head. It's like the Nolan Batman finally brooding on the top of my head thinking, better be careful, this looks slippery down the front.
Got a bat pimple.
But, I'd be wrapped if I got a bat pimple. But yeah, I don't know. It's just a funny thing. It wasn't even a bad thing. It was just one of those things where you look and you go, oh, well, I'm 50 next year. Like, I'm 48 now. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I turn 50 next year, and that to me is what? And hilarious, and what? And then I saw this photo, and I went, you know what? Now I'm at that point where I think people will say, oh, yeah, no, he looks about the right age.
I saw Adam Hill's post that he got the vaccine, and for a minute I was like, how did he get the vaccine? And then I realized, oh, he's 50, or he's like 51 or whatever, like, you know, we have a lot of friends now who are 50. Hughesy's got to be 50, right? Is Hughesy 50? Or is he must be nearly 50? And like Lemo's 50.
Yeah.
Like it's, I mean, it did feel when you were young, 50 felt pretty fucking old, didn't it?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And now
I mean, I'm 38, but like, for you old guys.
Yeah. Well, you started way young. You shouldn't have even been allowed in the clubs.
I was 12.
Yeah. It's just that you were tall. You got away with it. There's no way.
This height since I was 12. Story checks out.
Yeah, it'll be fine. It's just a funny thing. I don't know. It's like I actually feel better physically in my late 40s than I do from 10 years ago.
Yeah, because you're not doing as much stuff.
Well,
slow down a bit.
Well, I'm not doing as much fun stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what I really mean. You're not like the idea of just like going out at night, like that has become, it's almost one of the things that I fear about like re-emerging into the world of stand-up because I've done some stuff, but I haven't really got used to the idea that my job is a nighttime job. Oh. I've gone back into a regular schedule of like, by the time that I'm normally meant to be on stage, I'm normally showered in my pajamas, working on some UK goggle box to wind down after a long day.
I went to a gig on Saturday that I was working at, and it was at the Comedy Store, and there were quite a few comedians there. And then it was like, do you want to hang around for a drink? And I was like, yep, that sounds good. And I got in at 2:45, and it was 8 hours past where I felt comfortable.
I assume I still have it in me, but because I also haven't been drinking.
Yeah.
Like there's been a few opportunities where friends have gone out for a night out, all those sort of things. But I've not gone out and been part of it because I'm not drinking.
Yeah. Mate, I have been drinking.
I may never go out after 10 o'clock again.
No, it makes sense as well. 7 o'clock show, you can even get a snack on the way home and be in bed by 10.
Suddenly I start lobbying for the lockout laws in Sydney. I'm like, no, it was good when everything closed at 10. Everyone should stay out.
I'm fine with it. That's how politics works. You get older.
It is true, right? As soon as you're fine with it, you're just like, actually, you know, this. I'm seeing the other side now that I'm fine with it. Now that it doesn't affect me in any way.
Why do you young people feel a need to stay out so late, completely ignoring our past?
Why don't you just like stay? Why don't you just stay home and watch UK Gogglebox like I do, rather than going out and taking pills all weekend and fucking dancing to music and having sex with each other and like, I mean, it sounds like cutting. Just sounds like a lot of fuss at this age.
It sounds like a lot of fuss.
You're like, I'd have to have a 4-week holiday. Like if I really wanted to do it, it'd have to be some time where I decided to have a holiday for 4 weeks. Actually, I wouldn't mind this holiday. This would actually be quite a relaxing holiday for me because I find it hard to, stop thinking about other things even when I'm, supposedly relaxing. But if I was recovering, that is one of the times back in the day, that like when you have no excuse but to stay on the couch and like you're going to order food and you're going to eat. Like it's almost as fun as the night out. You look forward to the recovery. Yeah. I think at my age, if I had one good weekend out, if I like went really hard, like Friday night, rolled it into Saturday night, I'm pulling up stumps by midday on Sunday and I'm laying at this resort, like I'll make it from the couch to the beach like for the next 3.5 weeks.
Yeah.
I reckon I could go out 1 week.
Yeah. Might as well have a run up and, a runway to pull it all back. I have actually been drinking way too much of late, and it's been basically because... So what I do now is I go out for dinners. That seems to be the way I go out now. So things have been super busy, and then I just had some people that I had to kind of lock in and catch up with, and that kind of led to a little bit of over drinking. And then I flew back to Adelaide for my mum's birthday for a couple of days, and I haven't told you this. Mum got a new TV. She wanted a new TV. Put in.
Okay, good.
TV gets delivered, and we're looking at it, and I'm like, what the fuck is going on with this TV, because it's massive. And she's like, I think it's only 20 centimeters bigger than my previous one. And I'm looking at it going, I think you're mistaking centimeters for inches. Make your own joke. I don't need to hear it. So anyway, it's so big, it comes with instructions on how to pull the foam out and put it back in to hold the TV up. The base itself is fucking heavy. So I'm putting this all together, and Mum's looking at me kind of a bit freaked out. I said, it's going to be fine. This is all going to be fine. This is all going to come together. You're going to be wrapped. But then I can't lift it up by myself because it's way too big. No. And Mum can't lift it up because she's just turned 68. So I've walked out onto the street and found a guy walking a greyhound rescue dog and figured, well, that's a sign that he's a good person with a good heart. Went up, introduced myself, explained I couldn't lift up the TV. Would he be able to help me? He said, are you Justin Hamilton? I said, yes. He came.
Are you serious?
He came over to my mum's house. Mum fed the dog with some biscuits that she keeps for her friend's dogs. We lifted the TV up. We paid him $50 for helping us out. Then I spent the next hour plugging everything in, putting everything in. And then Mum said, well, what do you want to watch? I said, we should watch a blockbuster. And she said, well, why don't my favorite Nolan movies, Dunkirk, why don't we watch that? And we watched Dunkirk, and we could see the pause on Tom Hardy's nose. That's how big.
Well, I was going to say, but that's all you could see of his face because the rest of it was covered by a fucking
mask.
It was
just one paw. Kenneth Branagh, you could see all the lines. And so now Mum has a tiny IMAX cinema set up at her house.
I mean, that's cool though. I'm glad that it was able to be actually set up. Apparently my TV, and I've got to do something about this tomorrow because I've like ignored the warning 3 times now, but there's like a recall of the brand of TV that I have because some of them have caught on fire or something.
Oh, right.
So like it's actually something that, I'm sure that it's only a small amount in, and this is just one of those things that they have to do. They have to do a recall. But at the same time, you're like, well, I probably should follow that up But I must admit that the warning has come up 3 times and I've taken a photo of it and I still have not followed it up. So that is a job for tomorrow. I'm definitely following up my... The only annoying thing is there's just part of you that gets like, well, the only solution to this is going to be they're going to take my TV away and they're going to send me another TV. But fucking, like, that'll probably be, mean I'll have some time where I don't have a TV.
Yeah, that's exactly what'll happen.
And maybe I'm willing, risking my entire house burning down just so that I don't have to, like, you know, spend 2 days reading a book.
Yeah, well, heaven forbid.
Oh, I tell you, can I give you a book recommendation?
Yes, please.
My friend Max Barry, who you know, yeah. Max. And so I went to high school with Max, and he's just written a book called The 22 Murders of Madison May, which I highly recommend to both the listeners of this show because it's got a time travel element. So right. If you like this and you like sort of, you know, something that works around time travel themes, I don't think this is giving too much away, but there's someone gets involved in some people traveling through time to either murder someone or prevent a murder of somebody. And like, it's a really fun, like it was, I haven't sat down and read a book from cover to cover in so long. And at the end of it, I felt really grateful to Max that he had created something that was like so interesting that I could lose myself in it for like 2 or 3 hours. It's great. It's really good.
That's exciting. That's really exciting. It feels like he wrote something specifically for you.
I mean, look, that's a bad business model because he sends me the book for free.
Right.
I'm not even sure it's out yet. I've got like a cover that isn't the official cover. So.
Right. That's exciting, though.
It's great.
I always feel better for literally putting aside some time to sit on a lounge and read. And it's dumb that I have to remind myself and schedule it in. But every time I do it, I just feel I feel a lot calmer, and I also feel a lot more creative as well, because the process is such a slower process. It's like your head gets into a nice rhythm, and then when you come out of it, I'm full of ideas for other stuff as well.
I put the fucking like Twitter and Instagram back on my phone this week because I'd taken them off my phone, and I put them back on my phone because I had to do some research for something that I'm working on. But fuck, it's so quick the way that your brain just goes back to like, I went through like a couple of weeks where I really could just leave my phone in another room.
Yeah.
And now I'm back to the idea of even just during this conversation, like I can feel the temptation to go check your phone. Why? What's going to happen? What has happened? Like what? It's fine. Just fucking leave it. But the book does do a good job of resetting you into going, no, here's a thing that you've just got to concentrate on. But
yeah,
I think that I'm nowhere near as good at that as I used to be. And that's why I thought this book was so great, because it was no effort to fall into the world and sort of enjoy the story that was being told.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. You know something else that I did that I have not done in a long time? I watched a comedy special on Saturday.
Ah, Bo Burnham?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't even know where to start. So I'm just going to start here because we haven't spoken about this.
No.
So you don't watch comedy specials very often. What made you decide to check out Bo's special?
So I need to sort of say, over the last few years, I just lost interest in it as an art form. I enjoy performing it, but I don't particularly, you know, I just think it's, after decades of watching so much stand-up, it's not relaxing to me to sit and watch a comedy show. It's like, if I, you know, there's other things that I have interest in and I would rather be involved in them than watching a comedy special. But on the Big Squid podcast, I have my friend Rachel Melanta, who's been in an Australian comedian who moved to Canada just before lockdown kicked in and has been in lockdown pretty much ever since. And she's, you know, having a, you know, her challenges over there, being away from home, etc. And so she's been a regular guest on the Big Squid podcast, and we just talk about whatever she wants to talk about. And we had something planned, and she said to me, I want to talk about Bo's new show. And my first reaction was, fuck, I don't have much time at the moment. Well, I could be watching NBA when I could, but I'll have to watch this. And that's what she wants to talk about. So, you know what, I'm not going to be an asshole. I'll watch it. And
if you don't know Bo Burnham, I'm edging here. I'm waiting to jump into the conversation. I'm going to savor it. So if you don't know Bo Burnham, he's a he came up in the internet age. He was like a young, like very popular internet comedian, like doing songs and, you know, all sorts of stuff. Super enthusiastic, but came out to Melbourne when he was clearly in the middle of a transition from being that into being like a comedian who was working the circuit and was starting to explore. Like, he'd always been very clever. Even his silly stuff was incredibly clever. Like, you know, breaking third wall and looking back on himself and, like, you know, flipping things in jokes and stuff in inventive ways that other people weren't doing. So he always had a great inventiveness about his work, but it was quite light in tone. And then we saw him in Australia, I think, in a transition between when he was really starting to grasp with some things. I think some things really unsuccessfully and some things you could see, like, what he was going for.
Yeah.
I loved his last special. I thought his last special was so impressive. And then he stepped away from comedy. He stepped away for 5 years because I was listening to him talk about it on a podcast called The Good One, which is a great American vulture does this podcast. And it's all, they get a comedian on and they get them to talk for an hour about a specific joke and like what the – you know, joke meant in their life and where it came from and what transitions it had. It's a really, if you're interested in comedy, it's a great podcast. And Bo's episode, he talks about, you know, stepping away from comedy because he was on stage in front of stadiums because he was a big star, you know, in front of stadiums of people and like doing this amazing show, this show that I thought was just absolutely fantastic. And he said he was having like essentially panic attacks for the entire gig.
Yeah.
And so he decided that he had needed to step away from it. And he went and made some movies. And-
I performed with him in when he first came to Australia. So that was the first time. So I'd met him. I'm not pretending that I know him, but I met him and hung out with him backstage and liked him. And I thought his movie Eighth Grade was fantastic. I thought that was a really funny and sweet movie. So
it was so smart. It was like, he was like, what can I use about what I know, which is like young people?
Yeah.
Like I do have a sense of that, you know, and how can I, like, I mean, he's an incredibly skilled filmmaker, which, you know, we'll get to when we talk about Inside, he's special. But, you know, he was in, what's that, that fantastic revenge sort of.
Pretty Young
promising
Woman.
Promising Young Woman.
Promising Young Woman,
yeah. He's great in that. Like, you know, there's a. You know, anyway, I won't go into the details of it, but he like does a really impressive job of a couple of things that character has to do in that movie, I think. And then it turns out for the last year or so, while he's been in lockdown, he decided that he was going to make a new special. And he filmed and constructed and sang and recorded and everything in isolation, did everything himself, the lights, the makeup, the costumes, the whatever, like just, and it made a comedy special that like is a document of his mental health in that time, but also what he made in that time and what the relationship between what he makes has with his mental health. I didn't really care for it, but did you like it? No.
I fell asleep halfway through, so I was hoping you could tell me how it ended.
So what, without me going into it, because I'm definitely going to go into it, but like, what did you think of it?
Oh, I loved it. Like, I was rapt. It was something that, you know, it. Look, to be honest, I may have gotten to it because I loved Eighth Grade so much. So it's like he was in the back of my head. So it's, I do want to see this. And the, I did not know what the conceit was, which was fun as well. So going into it and seeing that it was just something that he'd done on his own. And, you know, I think it's potentially, you know, for something hitting the mark of the times, even though they're very different shows, I feel like he's pulled a Nanette in capturing a very specific moment. And I thought it was pretty much a work of genius. I thought it was amazing.
I think you're underselling it. It made me, like, it inspired me in so many different ways, but it also, I found it incredibly depressing, like, because I was just like, oh, well, this has just gone way past anything I'm ever capable of. Like, I'm sure there are plenty of people who'd already done that, but at least I could go, if I just got better, like, I can see, you know, how I could be this person or how I could do what this person does. But I just looked at that and just went, there's no way I can do anything like that. This is, I agree with you. Like, and it's not to diminish Nanette, because Nanette is I think it has a lot of similarities with Nanette in that Nanette is a brilliant show in any era, but it was also about a specific moment in time. And it was those two things combining that made it the phenomenon that it was. And I think it's very much the same with, like, this show. This show would be a great show in any time, but so many of the things that he wrestled with were the things that I'm like, you know, the to-ing and fro-ing about the importance of comedy. Mm. Like, you know, like, that's such a thing that I've thought about so much in the last year is, like, our job seems so ridiculous. Is it important? It seems also super important, but it seems super ridiculous all at the same time. And how do you reconcile those two things? And what is the kind of meaning of it all now? And, like, the way that he is able to play, he plays, like, so many different sides of everything. Like, I think that's one of his great appeals to me, is that without telling you what he's doing all the time, he's often doing more than one thing. Like, he's owning it, but also parodying it. And he lives in this world where he manages to do both without there being some sort of ironic detachment from either. There's this moment of genius I think this is the best bit in the entire fucking thing, to be honest. And there are so many good things in this special. Like, but there's a song called White Woman's Instagram, which to me is, it was the first moment in it, because up until then I'd barely fucking breathed. It was the first moment in it that I almost considered not liking something, right? I was like, is this too generic? Like, do you mean, like, is this, like, too easy a target, or does it not make? But as it unfolds, it's firstly just one of the most, like, in a cinematic way, the ability to recreate the visuals that go with this song are just next level in how he even just managed to do it by himself and make it all happen. But the way that he frames it is about, like, it's not really particularly incredibly judgmental. It's making a point, but it's not making, like, a really mean point. And then it has this moment where it goes from mocking all the, like, you know, kind of, you know, frivolous almost things that, you know, white women will have on their Instagram, to this moment where this, you know, white woman is posting this late tribute to her departed mother who is not there to see the, you know, the boy that she loves, that she's there with, and that has, you know, that life's good, and all she just wants to say to her mum is that it worked out well and she misses her every day. And you're just like, he's not making fun of it. He's making fun of us. Like, he lets us believe that that song is about one thing. And then in this moment of all these things being things that are parodied, we go into it going, oh, well, this will be another thing that's being parodied. And almost at the start, you feel uncomfortable that you're like, oh, this is too personal to be something that you're parodying. And then you realize he's not really parodying it.
Yeah.
He's pulling the rug from all of us who got too sort of smug in the conceit or whatever it is. His capacity to serve both masters is just, I mean, there's that moment where he's commenting on his own video and then he starts commenting on the comment of his own video. Just, like, to me, that extraction felt to me like Stuart Lee's Ang Lee. You're not going to like me. The way that the piece, the majestic thing about the piece was the way that the piece unpicked itself and unraveled itself and kept revealing something about, like, not just what he was saying, but the very art form in which he was, like, and the talent on this guy. Like, the songs are catchy as fuck. Like, the characters that he does are amazing. Like, and what is a clearly performative mental breakdown? Like, there's no doubt that, like, he has filmed it in a way that is still performative. Like, you know, like, the right shot, the right moment, he edited it. Like, if he didn't want that really poignant, emotional, raw moment captured, then he wouldn't have sat in front of the camera when it happened and he wouldn't have edited it into the film. Of course, there is an artifice, but it's a legitimate story that I think he's constructing because this is his truth. Like, he's not banging it on. Like, he's a guy who stepped away from playing fucking stadiums because it was doing his head in. He decided he wanted to go back to comedy, and the year that he decided he wanted to go back to comedy, everything shut down. So instead of being out in front of people, which is what used to give him a mental breakdown, he stayed inside and made something that was going to take 6 months that took a year. I heard some people say that it's too long. No, that's kind of the point. The point is that it should be done and it's not fucking done. Because that is what he's telling us he's going through. That movie is as much about the fact that he decided to do something and then his mental health got worse and worse and worse as he did it. Like, and it was meant to take 6 months and it took a year. And then he just, and when do you put it out there? When is it finished? Like,
oh yeah. Like, it's to say it's too long is to miss one of the most important aspects of it, which is there's that point where he starts to panic, where it's like, well, if I finish this,
what do I do then?
Yeah, and everything else that's happening in the world, you know.
This is the only thing that's like keeping me slightly on track. You know, he says it in that first song. He talks about the idea of like Robert's been, you know, whatever it is, Robert's in a dark place, Robert's been depressed, whatever the line is in the song. And he talks about just getting, stand up, you know, sit down, write a funny song. And like, it's about, is comedy important to him? Is comedy important to the audience? Like, it's... I mean, I've watched it in its entirety 3 times. I have watched bits and pieces of it, fast forwarded just to rewatch bits and pieces of it, like probably another 3 or 4 times, a few pieces. Like, I just think it's, oh boy, it was fucking like, oh man, I haven't like, it just did my fucking head in. Like, I loved it.
Yeah.
I felt compelled by it in a way that I haven't been compelled by much like recently.
It's funny, I found it really inspiring actually. It was so much more interesting to me thematically, and it also, like, I haven't really had much of an inclination to write a new show anytime soon. I just kind of feel like there's other things that are more interesting ways to explore ideas, but this was a reminder that, oh yeah, you can do these kinds of things. I didn't see it as, oh no, I could never achieve that. And I'm not saying that I could make something of that craftsmanship, but the things that he was hitting on were really inspiring and did make me think, oh, I could, you know, there are areas that I have overlap with thoughts that I would love to explore. And this is a reminder that you can do it.
I mean, I think part of the reason it depressed me was that so many of the themes he explored were things that I thought were important, the themes to explore over this last year. And the way that he explored them was so much more interesting than the way that I was like thinking about exploring them. And so I found it depressing that like he managed to sum up 3 themes that I would have gone, now I want to talk about this and now I want to talk about this. Right. And he just managed to fucking do it, write a song or do a thing that kind of made all those points in a much more clever way. But I agree with you that it also unlocked that thing of just going, ah, right, this can be, I mean, this is something that people will find about in due time, but like we were having a conversation before we started about a project where some of the people that we would have used for the project are now kind of not available, but that there is a whole bunch of other people who actually would be really fucking great who might not get that opportunity ordinarily. And I think that what he has done is just smashed everything. It really feels to me like, well, how can you, I mean, Hannah did that a bit with what she did, right? She smashed down what it meant to do a really big successful stand-up show. There was all those like ridiculous debates around whether it was stand-up or a TED talk or whatever, which like to I think the people in England and Australia, we were just like, this was dominated every stand-up festival that like it went to. Of course it's fucking stand-up, it's really good stand-up as opposed to what you guys think stand-up has to be. Like, we were already thinking outside the box, But he got in the box and then put another box around the box, and then you realize the box was inside him the whole fucking time. Like, he's like, he just went, well, why are you saying something's not possible? Look at what I did at home by myself.
Yeah, well, he's potentially the first YouTube artist to, I could be wrong with this. It's not like I'm across a whole lot of YouTube stuff, yeah.
But he's the one.
Maybe he's the
one who showed
in the mainstream to create.
I think that what he showed is like, he's not a good comedian for a YouTuber, or any of those things that might get, like people looking down their nose at YouTubers. Like, a YouTuber just fucking lapped us.
Yeah.
Like, what we're doing, like, Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, like Dave Chappelle, these like geniuses, top of the game, these sort of things. I reckon someone just came along and just went, yeah, that's good, but how about this?
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. That's what the form needs. The form needs, it needs to be exploded, and it needs to be broken and put back together again. I was at the store on Saturday night, as I was telling you, and there are a few comedians there who'd seen it, and it was funny hearing them kind of talk about where they would have finished it. And a lot of the places where they would have finished it were, I think because I don't want to go into it too much, because I don't want anyone who hasn't seen it to have it ruined. But everywhere that they finished it would have meant that it finished without catharsis. And I think that's a very important aspect of it.
I mean, I think based on how much I enjoyed this, I think we can finally say that the global pandemic was worth it. If it produced this.
Yeah. I'm totally into it.
But in one go, he almost did it for us all as well. All our silly jokes about, like, I went and got a COVID test or whatever. He just went, this is it. I've summed up what it's like to be isolated and by yourself and confused about everything that's going on in the world and, all the different things we've dealt with. I've dealt with that. You guys can all move on. Like, which is good in a way, because, like, you now can never – there can't be anyone else sitting around going, I reckon I can still sum up COVID better than that. And if they are, I'd like to see their attempt at it.
It's also a good reminder for a lot of us here as well that it's stretched for a long time overseas, and I know that Victoria is going through a rough trot again, but some people have experienced all of that without a break.
His thing about turning 30, again, we can talk about this without giving away any details, but we've all been the comedian. 30 is a big deal, right, for people in general. The older you get, the more you realize they're not as big a deal. But when you're young, 20 passes by too quickly because 18 is exciting and you've got your 21st and all those sort of things. Like, 30 is a major one where you're like, I've had a lot of fun, but now I've got to, maybe grow up a little bit and think about my career and all these sort of things.
And then 40 is, I really should have grown up by now. But it's been a pretty fun 10 years.
Exactly. You know what I mean? Like, you relax into it a bit. But then we've all, I think both you and I would have had routines about what it was like to turn 30 and, how big a deal it was and over-dramatizing it. And then every other comedian who's ever turned 30 has pretty much done the same thing. The way that he dealt with the fact that it was a real thing to him, because it's so integral to the story, I won't give it away, but it's integral to the fucking story, the fact that he does turn 30. But then his self-awareness about how it is ridiculous, but at the same time, he indulges his legitimate fears. You're like, this is like a guy literally grappling with it. Like, he has enough intelligence or whatever to realize that at some stage he'll look back on how ridiculous this is, and he leans into the ridiculous. It's so sophisticated. It's just so, I could talk to you about, it was one of those things where I was like, I'd love to do, for no one else really, just for me, a podcast series where I just went through it bit by bit and talked to people about why I loved each bit of it. I just thought it was, there were a few times I stopped it because I just was like, I can't, I just need a moment.
Oh, right. Yeah. I went all the way through. You know what I'm like? I'm just zoned in. And I haven't had an opportunity to go back over it yet, but that first viewing was pretty fantastic. So it was very funny going into it, I don't want to be watching comedy. And then by the end of it going, oh, I wonder what else is out there. Maybe there's something else I'd like to watch.
Watch his previous special.
Yeah. That's what I'll do. That'll be heaps. But, you know, he's a young guy, and all the themes he touched on were universal as well. And I was quite gobsmacked at some of the honest comments that he makes in it. You know, they were the kind of comments that if you make them on Fofop, people reach out to you to see if you're having a nervous breakdown. So,
oh no, I worried for him. Like there was no, there's no doubt that you genuinely, like, worry for him. Like, and I don't know if like comedy is a healthy thing for him or not. And then we have to reassess whether we're willing to see him go through. And I think this is kind of thematic to what the piece is. How much of him does he have to give up for our amusement? And how much of him is it healthy for him to give up for our amusement? Because when he is willing to put himself through a nervous breakdown to entertain us, it's fucking majestic. But like, does he owe us to keep doing that? Like, isn't his mental health and like his life and those sort of things more important? It's just so, oh, Justin, I loved it.
It brings up a lot of interesting questions. I do think there is something very dangerous about the comedy world, and we've seen it with previous generations who, you know, the guys and girls who were headliners before us, and after a while, that lifestyle just kind of burns away, and if you're not careful, you can become a caricature because you're living so much of your life on stage. You become that version of yourself all the time. And that's very dangerous for when you're not on stage and you're that person.
Right. I think that's...
I've been much happier since I've performed less.
It's funny. Like this week, I've not really been concentrating on it. I've had some other things on, and I actually have some other things on in between. Which is good, but I had to do a little press around it this morning, so it got it top of mind, which is this weekend I'll be in Wagga Wagga doing my show We're Legal, which is about me being arrested on the way to Wagga Wagga in 2017. Yep. And in 2017, that was a really horrible low point in my life. Like it was a horrible experience to go through, and I was having like a lot of health difficulties at the same time. It was no good. I feel in a much better place now, and I took the show to Melbourne, really enjoyed doing it. It's just like a fun story to tell now. But I thought it was important to go back to Wagga Wagga, but as it approaches, like I have some nerves around it. You know, the fact that when you do press and stuff, you know, there's a real awareness of like, there'll be people like who are on the flight in the audience, or the police are going to be there. Now they've seen the show already, but like, you know, like, well, whatever, you know, there's characters from the story. And, you know, at the end of the day, the version I tell on stage is a story. Like all the things that are in it are like are true, but like there are things that are not in it. And there's like, it's 80 minutes that sums up 36 hours. So like, you know, I've had to trim some bits. I have realized as it approaches that I'm a bit scared about it. Like I'm a bit worried about like, you know, just how the weekend's going to unfold. And you know what I'm like, I don't really like unwanted attention, like, you know, outside of work hours, and it just comes with a little bit more unwanted attention. But
you should be less successful like me. I catch public transport all the time. It's great.
What I would say is that I think also it's good that I'm doing something that scares me. I think that, you know, watching Bo's thing, like it's much smaller drop in the ocean than what he's attempting. But I do feel like me taking the show back to Wagga Wagga and doing it there is like some shit might go wrong. But if shit goes wrong, I'll be fine and I'll deal with it. And, you know, it'll be a really interesting and provoking experience to do the show there.
Yeah. Well, maybe this is how you blow Bo Burnham out of the water and you turn Will Eagle into a 36-hour special. So you take us through every moment.
I mean,
All the way to the chicken salt.
That would be great if I literally did just like had a clock on stage. It's a 36-hour experience. You don't have to see it all at once. It's in like 3-hour blocks or whatever, but it's literally... Right. Yeah, you released a special during lockdown. I released 36 specials, man. Each 1 hour long.
How do you feel about that?
Like the TV show 24, but it's just about me getting arrested on the way to Wagga Wagga.
Yeah, 36. It's great. It's a half better than 24. No, that'll be fun. I think that'll be really good. It sounds exactly like what you described, which is something that's a bit of a pain in the ass and a little bit, you know, anxiety inducing, and then you'll do it and you'll have a really good time and it'll be great.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it'll be fine. Anyway, come out and see the show if you want to. Oh, speaking of shows I'm doing, how about this then? So I've just announced that the Brisbane Powerhouse July 4 and Sydney at the Enmore July the 3rd, which is a Saturday night, I'm going to be doing my improvised stand-up show, What You're Talking About, Will. So,
oh, great.
The Enmore is the biggest venue that I have ever performed that show in. So, again, something that I guess this feels like, and I actually maybe even made this decision after I'd watched the Bo Burnham special, because this was only an opportunity that arose really quickly, and it's actually on in less than a month. But
yeah, I was about to say, like, that's really close.
Yeah, July 3rd, actually, I've got to sell a lot of tickets. That's really actually got me a kick up the ass. Could I just say, if you're listening to this and you're in Sydney, this is my big Sydney show for this year, and it's going to be at the Enmore, and I'm going to do What You're Talking About, Will, and just... the idea of walking out in front of however many people, we get in that big room that the Rolling Stones played in, and then just trying to make up a show on the spot that is only for that audience. I think it'll be cool.
Yeah, it'll be great. It'll be heaps of fun, and that's a great room as well. Like, that's a room that some big rooms can feel there's a distance to the audience, but that room, everyone's up close. The acoustics are great. You feel a real energy.
Yeah, no, right, it's because I've actually done, I got a review years ago for one of the shows I did at the Enmore where like someone must have just come in late or whatever, and I like, you know, mucked around with them. But the person who reviewed the show, like, it was probably where this show was born, because the person who reviewed the show thought that was the best bit of the entire show. The rest of the show.
You would have been furious.
But thought, oh, absolutely furious. But then I was like, you know what? Maybe I can monetize this fury. Maybe I could do an entire show that's made up of the thing she thought was the best bit. So I am at the Enmore, July 3. Buy a ticket, please.
That'll be fun. You must be excited to be doing that.
Yeah, well, it's just came up, as I said. But now that I've spoken to you about it, like, I've thought about those two things. I guess I do have a couple of exciting things on the horizon. Maybe my actions and my thoughts are disjointed from each other.
Yeah, you know, the thing is because it hasn't been a consistent thing for you, it was like at the start of the year, I was doing quite a few gigs, and then things have been just so busy that I haven't been able to jump up for the last couple of months. And then I now have a gig tomorrow night where I'm emceeing down at the Enmore Comedy Club. And there's a part of me that's, you know, oh, fuck, all right, I'm going to have to do this. I'm going to have to prep because I haven't gigged for a while. I'm going to have to think my way through this, blah, blah, blah. And I don't know why I'm being a pain in the ass about it, because I know as soon as I've done it, I'll be wrapped that I got back up on stage and it was a really good time. But I think when you have that time off, there is that little, oh, I've got to restart. I've got to click back into action. I've got to start thinking that way again. I've got to think about where I'm going to be, blah, blah, blah. But once you do, it's great.
Well, I think the funny thing for me also is that these will be my last gigs until Christmas, really, because I have like 4 or 5 months of some other work that's just going to take up most of my time, and travel and whatever in between. So, and I want to do a brand new show next year. I want to do a new stand-up show next year. So I need to take some time to work out what that's going to be. Anyway, I'm going to lock myself. I was going to say.
It's about you getting too much vitamin D over the course of a few months.
I have been spending a lot more time outside. Maybe I should call my show. I'll get rid of the wheel puns. I'll call it Outside.
Yeah, Outside. Yeah.
And it's about a guy who wasn't in lockdown for any of the COVID-19 pandemic.
Yeah, and feeling guilty about it.
But yeah, because I won't have any more big shows for the rest of the year, really. I think I am excited about these shows. There's something quite nice about just doing a couple of shows, like a couple of one-off shows, and then, you know, putting it away for a while and writing my new show.
Yeah, that'll be fun. Did you get around to watching The Mayor of Easttown?
Haven't watched it yet. Haven't started. Amy started and didn't get hooked on it at the start, which normally means that, like...
You won't watch it.
Well, no, I just have to watch it at some stage when, you know, she's not around and there's not football to watch. So some weekend where the Bulldogs lose and I don't want to watch the replay and she's away. So don't know when, but I am looking forward to it. I've avoided spoilers so far.
Oh, that's a good effort. That's a really good effort because I find that as soon as I even talk about it near my phone, it starts coming up as suggestions and you're going, I don't want to be paranoid, but are you listening in on me, little phone?
I mean, everybody's talking about the Mayor of Easttown anyway.
Yeah.
Or Mayor of Easttown. Right?
Mayor of Easttown.
Mayor of Easttown. No. Which is a different show that I'm pitching. It's called The Mayor of Easttown. How about that?
It's about a guy who's outside during lockdown.
not having a mental breakdown either, in either of them. Like getting happier. It's about a guy whose life got happier during lockdown.
Yeah. He doesn't know anything that's going on and just keeps telling people, hey, relax.
He goes, I'm the mayor. Everything will be fine. Everything's fine.
I'm the mayor. I'm the mayor of Easttown. And I can go outside whenever I want. Cheers.
Which is the third show we've combined with. So
Everybody knows your name. Everybody. There's that really happy guy that doesn't know what's going on in the rest of the world.
What's his name?
That's the mayor. What a combination. Finally.
Oh, that's funny.
So you think you'll do the festivals next year? Is that the aim?
Yeah. I think that I am... I haven't done a new show since 2019. And so that's a long time for me, like to have not done like a new show, seeing I normally do a new one every year. The improv shows have been good for like, you know, kind of filling in the gaps, like in regard to, because I do actually talk about the times, whatever's going on in the times a bit in those shows, you know, that's tends to be reflected in them. So I don't feel like there's been as big a gap. I don't feel like I've been away for like, you know, by the time it'll be 3 years, but it'll be, 3 years since I've done a brand new stand-up show. So I think I'm pretty sure that I have some things to say. At the moment, I had I've been really, something that I've really been interested in for years is the idea of like, can you do, like, you know, comedy is so easy in black and whites, you know, like this is, I hate this, I love this, you know, but the world is so much more complex than that. And I've had a couple of instances where really close friends of mine have started believing some pretty things that I don't see much evidence for, I guess is the most generous way of putting
aliens.
It. Well, aliens, there is a little bit of evidence for. Like, aliens would be, it's a step above aliens, but it is certainly a set of beliefs that has overwhelmed them and overtaken them and dealt with their, like, mental health and all these sort of things in ways that, you know, probably... Anyway, I'm not here to judge. I'm just here to say it's happened. I want to, like, be able to talk to, you know, people and be there for them and, like, have those conversations and try to, like... But how do you argue? How do you engage? Like, how do you do these sort of things? That area, because I am genuinely, like, you mock me for it, but, like, I do like to see
things. I don't mock you. How do I mock you?
You mock me for trying to, like, for seeing things for other people's opinions. That I'll, like, you know, that I'll, like, really try to see the best and even the worst. Like, that is...
No, that's unfair. I don't mock you for that. Sometimes I mock you because I don't believe that you do see the other side and you're trying really hard to see the other side, and I mock you for giving it a go, even though I appreciate it.
You know what? And what you've just said is much more accurate than what I said, because that is the mockable bit, is that I feel like I need to mount a defense for them, but my heart's not in it.
I know. I always know too. It sounds so clinical. It's like, wait a minute. This is like a robot repeating what it's been programmed to say as you put it out there.
But so I want to try to channel that a little bit more. Like channel that, like, can I write some more stuff that just has some complexity to it? Like, I don't know. I don't know if I can, but I think that that is what I'm interested in, is like taking a topic and really sort of, because one of the things that I like really struck me in this conversation that I had, like I had a really good long conversation with this person who just wasn't having long conversations with people because people don't want to hear that this set of beliefs that they have, right? But they want to talk about them and they want to be heard, and they think that, that they feel isolated because people aren't listening to them and they can't see what they see and all those sort of things. And I realized halfway through this sort of conversation that because this issue is their passion, they're so much better researched on it than me. I know the gist, and I know in general the stuff that they're saying I don't think is probably true. But do I have actual evidence that I can quote, like, offhand? Have I, like, can I link to an article? Can I say this person said this? Or, like, I can't, because I'm not as passionate about it as they are, right? And so there was a point in the argument where I realized I'm definitely not winning. Like, I would, if I wasn't such a cynic, I would be convinced by the argument this person is mounting, because they're so much better informed, well, you know, quotation marks informed, than I am, right?
Right.
They sound like they're right. If you were overhearing this conversation and you didn't know any of the actual facts and didn't trust like scientists and the experts and stuff, you just thought these two people are equally equipped to have this argument, this person was 100% winning the argument, because I just didn't have the capacity to be able to tell. Like, you know, my arguments basically in my head were, I know that's probably wrong, and I know that if I went away and Googled like why that is wrong, I'd find a whole bunch of really credible information that would tell me exactly why that's wrong. But right now, I don't have that information at hand. And one of the things that we do comedically a lot is reframe scenarios so that, you know, we're the hero of the story, or we say the clever thing at the right time, or, you know.
Yeah, it's the only place I can be.
But what if, so in this power dynamic, I was really interested in the fact that that was not the case at all. I was completely, and I'm a professional communicator, like I should be good at this sort of stuff, and I was being completely outwitted by this person who I think doesn't know what they're talking about. So I don't know. There's just something about, I don't know why that particular moment really resonated with me, but I was like, here is an area that I would like to start thinking about what next year's show is going to be. Like, even if it ends up never having anything to do with that conversation, I feel like I found a place to start. There's something I'm interested in exploring.
Yeah, it's a fertile ground. And you will find stuff there in the smallest things every day. Like, on the weekend, I had nowhere near an argument, but I had a disagreement with a friend of mine who was kind of shitting on, you know, teenagers of today, just saying that they're caught up in their own world and that they don't look outwards. And anyway, I was disagreeing with that, blah, 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 blah. And then later that afternoon, I was waiting to cross the road on Cleveland Street in Sydney, and there was an ambulance coming. And so all the traffic had stopped and had gone to the other side of the road to quickly get through this intersection. And a young girl with noise-cancelling headphones on was just wandering across the street, and this ambulance has pulled up and is like, sirens flaring, and she's just in her own world. And then she's turned around and looked, and then just kind of turned back and casually kept walking. And she just did not give a shit. And it was like, because if that was me, you know, and you hadn't picked it, you'd be gesticulating, oh my God, I'm so sorry. You'd be jumping out the way. But she just looked and went, nah, you know what? I don't give a fuck if someone's having a heart attack.
It's not me.
Yeah, and all I could think was, oh, well, I guess I lost that argument in this instance.
Well, I mean, individual examples are never your friend when it comes to making broad statements about, you know, any particular group. You can always find some flaws in the system.
Yeah, and I found one right there.
Yeah, but I do agree in principle that, like, we have to embrace youth. Like, you know, like, give people opportunities to, like, it comes up regularly because it's just an obsession of mine, but I've been thinking about it so often, which is, if you look at the nominees for the best show at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival, they were all essentially non-household names. Not really, like, necessarily, but, like, on the edge of, like, people knowing who they are, or, you know, not quite there. all of them, well, a lot of them had been doing comedy for a very long time, you know, to like recognition that in our generation would have come to them much earlier because there was much less people competing for those sort of opportunities. And, you know, just like, you know, things didn't progress as quickly. Like, I just look at these new generations and I just think the quality that they produce every year, like, is... like, there was whole years where, like, I'm lucky that people stuck with me at all. Like, you know, I just think, like, it was so great they got an opportunity. The internationals weren't in town. They had an opportunity at the right time slots, the audiences, the reviews, and they all got an opportunity to sort of graduate to the next level. And they all fucking nailed it because they were all ready. They were ready fucking 5 years ago probably, but they are now super ready. And that's a good thing. Like, that's Bo Burnham, you know? Like, it's...
yeah.
You gotta... like, I was devastated, but at the same time, I was super excited about it. I was like, oh, fucking good on you guys. Like, good on you guys for working out a better way to do this than we did. Like, that's good. Like, we're part of that. We're part of the tradition that, like, we built something and then they twisted it and built it in a different way and dismantled it and whatever, all the necessary things that you have to do to build something new, but they're doing it. Like,
yeah, and there's another generation behind them that are about to do that to their work, and that's just how it progresses.
Oh, my God. Suddenly and feels then so old.
We are old. We're on our way out. Well, you know, I'm on my way out. I'm definitely on my way out. I want to live in a different area. I find it terrifying being backstage at gigs sometimes, not with the young people but with the people my age. Why are we still here?
Exactly. You're like, I'm fine to be here, but why are you guys here?
I want to learn from these kids. You guys are fucking it up by trying to reminisce.
Don't make me look old in front of these kids I'm trying to be friends with.
Yeah, they all thought I was cool until you turned up and said we did gigs together in 98. It's only one place for a Yoda back here, buddy, and this arsehole's got it.
Yeah. Well, Justin, what can we play? Big Squid, you recently released the live episode that you did. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. That was released last week. So that's a really fun show with Tom Gleason, Alice Fraser, Richard Feidler, Rove McManus, Alexei Toliopoulos, Georgia Mooney, Angela Flapierre, AJ Lamar, and Ben Elwood coming in hot. So that's a really fun show. And then this week it's Angela Frappier is back on, and Rachel coming from, poor thing, coming from deep lockdown in Canada. That poor girl is having a time. So, but she brings the funny.
Is there anything else that you would like to plug?
No. I don't know if there's anything to... I don't know where I stand with some stuff, so I don't know what to say.
No, fair enough.
That's... like, it's like I'm working on all these projects and I'm...
you know, are the busiest man. Busiest man in show business. Larry Emder called you up, did you say?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm working with Larry on The Chase. And let me just say, things have gotten darker in some of the jokes that The Chasers are making. They're letting me... they're letting me write some stuff that I think is pretty funny. And then they said, yeah, it's so much darker now. And my first reaction was, is it? And then I watched an old episode. I went, holy shit, yes.
I like that. I like the idea that you're introducing this sort of darker vein of humor to The Chase. Like, particularly if there's like locked on fans, it would just like, is this a little edgier and more despondent about the very nature of the universe than it used to be?
Oh, yeah. Some of the chasers are now almost openly flirting with Larry, and because he's so nice, you get to watch him go red in the ears. It's great.
And, make sure you check out Bo Burnham's special Inside, available now on Netflix. Come and see us at my shows. That would be really good. And there's a whole bunch of other podcasts at tofop.com. Tofop, Two Guys, One Carp, Willosophy this week. Karen O'Leary from the show Wellington Paranormal, which is like a spin-off of the What We Do in the Shadows universe, and it's a really funny show, and she is super funny and incredibly charming. And it was just, if you need a little ray of sunshine in your week, I would highly recommend that chat.
Great.
Thank you, Justin.
Thank you.